We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Steal by Zion, and a run out, and a right-handed rack attack that sends this place into a frenzy.
It's Williamson on the left for three.
Oh, he's back. He's back in a big way.
Jones the lob to Barrett.
Zion flying in to rock the rim.
Reddish, the bounce pass ahead for Goldwire. Leave it to Barrett for the dagger. Zion backing down on Little. Put him in the spin cycle and put it off the window for two. Now a steal by Zion. Running behind the pack to jam that thing home. Spins up on Little. Can't get it. Tap follow by Zion. Puts Duke back in front. North Carolina can win it. 9 seconds left. Here's Kobe White up the right side. 7-6. 5-4. 30 feet out. 3-2. Step back fadeaway. Three. Rattled out. And the Blue Devils win it. And it's on to the championship game tomorrow night against Florida State.
North Carolina is as good as anybody, and they're playing great basketball, and we actually played outstanding defense against them, especially in the second half. They're the most difficult offensive team to defend. This is such a physical game. It's a great win for our team. I mean, not a good win. It was a great win for us.
In a world of trouble, and RJ took it away. 4-on-2, it's Jones the lob, and RJ soaring in to throw it down.
It's Jones driving inside, rising up and hitting to give Duke a 9-point lead. And the celebration is underway here in Charlotte. Zion Williamson is the star in the Queen City as the King claims his throne and the Blue Devils claim another ACC title.
We went through a lot during the summer, through the season with injuries and stuff. To see us come back together and win a conference championship and win a strongest conference, I mean, it says a lot to us. It says a lot about us.
Us freshmen all came here with one goal in mind, to win. And when we got on the campus our first day, everyone took us in with open arms. And I mean, everyone else's goal is the same as ours, and that's to win. So we all do whatever we can. We'll sacrifice whatever it is just to win.
They won a championship, not just a championship, but the ACC championship. And playing three outstanding opponents in order to do it. You know, our league is so difficult. To put three games like this together, it's amazing. You could tell at the end we were gasping for air. They still made plays. They still made plays. It's so damn good.
Anytime you're in the tournament, you don't take that for granted. But being a one seed and being the number one overall, it means a lot. Coach made it very clear afterwards, we're 0-0 and have to go from here. But it was obviously very exciting seeing our name called.
It's going to be fun, especially for our first time. You know, we've been very good as a team when everybody's together. It's March Madness. It's going to be a lot of, you know, crazy times, and I just can't wait to be part of it.
Towards the end of the season is where teams start to feel like they're at their best, and I think we're at our best right now. So, I mean, it feels great. I mean, it shows us that all our hard work is paying off, and, I mean, let's dance.
And welcome in. It's the Duke Basketball Podcast, NCAA Tournament Edition, as we look ahead to the start of hopefully the six-game march to Minneapolis for Duke as they look to try to claim a sixth national championship. I'm David Shumate, joined alongside, as always, by Associate Head Coach John Shire. And, Coach, you didn't have anything going on last weekend, did you?
No, not much. Relax. You know, it's funny because you have these three incredibly competitive, tough games, and you win them, and you win the ACC tournament. And you literally have to move on right away. It's a very tough dynamic, but it's also for good reason.
You had about 12 hours to where you could enjoy before it's time to turn the page.
Yeah, really about, I guess, I would give it about 16 to 18 hours.
14 of which I'm sure you needed to sleep to recover right from the three previous days. We're certainly going to talk a lot about the ACC tournament down in Charlotte as Duke claimed number 21, Coach K, number 15, which is just a ridiculous number when you think about there's only been 66 of those events in the conference's history. But first and foremost, obviously, number one overall seed in the NCAA tournament, going to be playing in the East region and opening up in Columbia, South Carolina for the first weekend. And I told a lie last week. I said the difference between the ACC tournament and the NCAA tournament is you're going to know who you're going to play. You don't know who you're going to play.
That's very misleading on your part. I'm going to tell you what right now.
Because Duke is going to face the winner of a game that's going to be played on Wednesday evening in Dayton between NC Central and North Dakota State. Obviously, the storyline that jumps out, Lavelle Moulton, I know someone who's very close to Coach Krzyzewski and close to the entire program here. You don't know how it's going to play out, but I'm sure you guys are certainly happy for him.
Yeah, well, he's done a heck of a job. You know, they've won the championship in the MEAC the last 3 years. They've been in this position before. They play a very good North Dakota State team. And, you know, I think the biggest thing for our guys, it's unusual not knowing who you're going to play. There's only a few teams, four teams, right, who yep. don't know who they're going to play. And that's the next step. You want to know so you can prepare and get mentally ready. So we're anxious to find out.
So in some ways, I guess that's kind of keeping with the theme that you guys have had the last few weeks with Zion Williamson returning. The focus on getting whole and focusing on what you guys are doing. I would imagine the first few days this week we're going to be about focusing on building on that more so than looking at a scouting report. Is that fair?
Yeah, it is.
Either way, if you knew who you're going to play or didn't know who you're going to play.
No question. Well, these first couple of days we were able to use last week because we didn't know our opponent. So we could focus on ourselves, tighten some things up on both ends. And now it's the same thing. When you play three games in 3 days like we did, there's some slippage there. There's some things you need to look at and say, okay, we need to do more of this. And some things you look at and say, all right, we really need to work on this. And I think that gives us a chance to do that right now.
Well, coming up, we're going to take a look at the NCAA tournament, take a look at the East region in a bit of detail. But before we get to that, we don't want to gloss over what was a remarkable run in Charlotte. 3 games in 3 days, 3 entirely different styles of play from the zone of Syracuse to the run and gun of North Carolina to the defensive intensity that Florida State brings. But obviously, everyone wants to talk about the player of the year, the freshman of the year, and for the first time ever, someone who claims all three, the tournament MVP. You knew going in Zion Williamson had looked good in practice. Could you have imagined what he was going to be out there on the floor in Charlotte?
Well, no matter what, even if he looked great, so you go 13 for 13 in his first game back, that's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And, you know, the thing I was, you know, his play I think speaks for itself, but just the fact that he could play so many minutes and 3 days like he did, it shows his, one, his wind was really good, really happy with where his conditioning is at. But then another thing is just his will to win. I thought that kicked in, and sometimes when you might be a little fatigued, adrenaline takes over, your will carries you through, and I think that's what happened with Z.
Saw the full bag of tricks as well. I mean, hit some threes in the tournament. We saw the mid-range jumper. Obviously, the dunks in transition, the defensive intensity that he brings. But, you know, we'll talk a lot about Zion, but want to take a step back and say, what does it say about this team that, you know, you've got so many dynamic players, a lot of people that think maybe 3 in the top 5 in the upcoming NBA draft when we get to June,
that on the floor they had the presence of mind of, this guy's hot, let's feed him. And that kind of selflessness that comes for guys like R.J. Barrett, Trey Jones, Cam Reddish, and the others, it kind of speaks, I think, to the team dynamic and how close-knit this group is, that when they see that, you know, it's this guy's day, they're not afraid to keep feeding him.
Shoemate, one of the things that's very unique about this group is, you know, you mentioned we could have three guys going to the top five or whatever of the draft. And sometimes, two things. One, sometimes the draft doesn't add up to how good you are right now in college. You know, a lot of it's based off of who you're going to be. And so I think with our guys, they are that good right now. And also, they're not thinking about what's going to come afterwards. And I think that's something that can creep in at this time of the year. They've stayed really focused on Duke winning, flat out, whatever that means. To me, that's what, it's contagious. You know, it starts with those three guys. It feeds through the rest of the team. And so that's, to me, what makes it so unique. When Zion had it going, you know, the last play, RJ comes off and gives him a little handoff, and he turns the corner and goes. And that's very unique.
I want to talk about one game specific, the North Carolina game, and everything that went into that from an emotional standpoint for these guys, having been swept in the regular season, losing those two games largely without Zion Williamson after only playing 30 seconds in the opener before injuring his right knee. Everyone knew going in, at least from a media national perspective, people kind of had their eye on a potential semifinal matchup. And when it came to be and those guys came out there, you could see almost a different level of engagement, a different level of intensity for Duke when they came out on the floor. And in the first half, in the first 9 minutes in particular, Cam Johnson went off and North Carolina jumped out to a big lead. I think it was 13 points, something like that, 33-20. How much of that, from your perspective, can you be too hyped up for a big game, and does it take you a little while to kind of settle into the flow of it?
Yeah, it can, but I didn't think we were necessarily too hyped up. I think it was they were running and doing what they do, and sometimes when you're in a high-level game like that, unfortunately, you're not going to just blow somebody out, and it was a game of runs, but I thought we showed great maturity not to let the lead grow in that first half. Once they got that lead to double digits, we came right back at them, and we did what we do, and it was one of those games. Both teams, it's high level. They are who they are. We are who we are. And obviously, it came down to the last second there. But it's one of those games you just knew. You hoped you're going to break away. You know, Zion's dunk to put us up five with about 8 or 9 minutes left. Thought there was a chance for us to extend the lead. We weren't able to do that. But give them credit to that. But heck of a game. I thought we really grew that night. Zion being back in there our first time. You know, really getting him back in the mix. Syracuse is different because of their zone, but versus a man-to-man team was different.
Look at a specific point in that game. It was 9 minutes in. I think Cam Johnson had 14 points in the first 9 minutes of the game. And it makes me laugh because I know a lot of the conversation around this team going into the tournament, it was the concerns maybe around three-point shooting, but also the lack of depth along the bench. And two guys in particular, Jordan Goldwire comes off the bench and basically shuts down Cam Johnson. Had kind of done the same thing the night before against Buddy Boeheim, but also a senior and Antonio Vrankovic, who had never played in the North Carolina series, and comes out and gives you guys big minutes when both Javon Delorier and Cam Reddish were dealing with foul trouble. I imagine as a coach, it had to give you a little bit of a wry smile, knowing what those guys were capable of, and then seeing them deliver on really the biggest stage the sport has to offer.
Well, coach has always said it, but everyone be ready. And they came through for us big time. And really, when we made that run, it was with those two guys in the game. And that's why, you know, we had some foul trouble. They started in the second half. It carried through. You know, we talk about Zion a lot, rightfully so. We talk about RJ. I think we talk about Trey and what he brings. And Saturday night, you know, I do want to talk about him and the things he did. And Cam, obviously. But, like, we don't win that game without Antonio and Jordan. There's no way. And so those guys stepping up and just really doing what they do. Jordan defending. Antonio had some passes, had a finish. Was really, really good. And it also, not only just what they did on the floor, but it gave everybody else energy in that boost just to get back to playing the way we can.
And as you said, it brought Duke back, and then it was kind of game on in the second half. Let's foot forward to the last minute. I think it was about 45 seconds to go when you guys took the timeout, down by one. Take us in the huddle. What was the conversation? What you're looking for? Everyone, I think, in the building thought at some point Zion was going to get a touch, and he ultimately got the go-ahead basket.
You know, really, coach wanted to get the ball to the middle of the floor and give a chance for RJ or Zion to make a play, and RJ made a good read and gave Zion the handoff, and he had that matchup that night, and Zion attacked, and the best part about that play was his instincts to follow up. And, you know, there are about four North Carolina players in there. Javon was right inside, ready to tip it in, but just his quick second jump to go ahead and tip it in. Heck of a play. We had our shooters ready, so it worked out well, but Zion, just his will, really carried us there.
And then North Carolina's next possession, Cam Johnson misses a three. RJ Barrett gets a really nice rebound, gets a foul, can't hit the free throws, and then to me what has been one of the focal points, the storylines for Duke all year, everyone's looking at Coby White missing a three. Well, he had to take a fadeaway three because there's some pretty good defense being played on him.
No, Trey's defense was incredible. To keep a guy like Coby White out of the paint in that situation when he's coming full steam, it was just incredible defense. If you go back and watch, really it started when they got the rebound. They tried to hit White right away, and he made White come back for the ball. And so just with doing that, that waste a couple seconds, and then controlling the ball and not fouling in that situation, and then us as a team getting back in there, I think RJ and Javon were right there by the rim to deflect the ball and to get the win.
And then going ahead to the next night, and I'm going to put this in contest, at least from my perspective, you saw what happened with Tennessee and Kentucky, where Tennessee won that semifinal game, had an incredible comeback in the SEC, and then really got steamrolled by Auburn in the championship game, came out and just kind of looked like they were sapped of energy. Duke didn't have that sort of an issue after coming off of such an incredible semifinal and then able to get it done against Florida State. That has got to be, to me, one of the most difficult things in sports to do, is after a game like that, put it back together and be ready to go against a really good Florida State team.
Well, I think you could point to a lot of examples where that happens. That is one, and Tennessee obviously is a really good team. But I think we used the Maui experience, where we played three games in 3 days and, you know, played Auburn, who's a top 10 team, speaking of Auburn again, and came back, and we came out in the first half and we had no life versus Gonzaga, and obviously we lost. So I think using that as a learning experience, and we talked about it a little bit, our players came out with great energy. We were ready to play. You know, they got up on us again. We bounced right back. But a lot of maturity in our part as a team. And we're going to have to do it because we're going to hopefully play in a bunch of games, and you have to move right on.
Yeah, because there was a stretch in that game. I think Florida State was up 8 or so, 27-19, and you guys took a timeout. And from that point on, Duke went on a run to pull back even. And the Gonzaga game that you're referencing, that's where Gonzaga kind of stretched out to 15 or 20 and makes the mountain much higher to climb. That seemed like a pivotal point in the game to get back on level terms.
It was. You know, we go into halftime tied, and we knew we didn't play our best. And we felt confident at that point, knowing if we are who we are, we can win this. And, you know, again, I just want to talk about Trey and what he did in that game. Not only with his defense, he definitely set the tone for us on defense, but offensively, how aggressive he was. You know, he actually hit a big three in that first half, our first three with about a minute left to go up by two. And then just in the second half, attacking the rim. And then his passing ahead. You know, we got a bunch of baskets in transition just by his pass aheads. And so that was big time on his part.
Averaged a little more than 15 points a game in the event, was an all-tournament selection, and also set a personal best in terms of scoring with 18 points in that championship game, which is pretty impressive, as you said, for him to take advantage of some of the driving lanes that were created. And also, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about when the game was at 9 with a little less than 2 minutes to go, and Cam Reddish stepping up and hitting a big three that really put Duke over the top.
Yeah, you know, it's two times against those guys, and they were really two daggers against them. Obviously different situations, but, you know, Cam, you know, that's the most he's gotten the free throw line in a few games, and he was really aggressive. He had some good drives. He was playing really good defense. You know, we switched a lot, so he's guarding Kevin Gelly and Kumaji and these big guys inside, and also defending smaller guys in the perimeter. And so that three for Cam, hopefully it gives him some confidence, because he's been right there. I think we all know he's capable of a breakout game here, and no better time to do it than March Madness in the tournament.
For this team, these guys have obviously won a ton at lower levels, but this is the first time wearing this jersey that they've won a championship of some form. Obviously, we just talked about Maui, didn't win the regular season. The psychological benefit of winning a championship and getting over that final hurdle to get it done, that has to be a huge benefit going to the NCAA tournament.
I think it's really good, but truly, I think there's no benefit other than the experience.
Okay.
You know, because winning an ACC championship is great. It does not mean you're going to win the first weekend. And I think there's a fine line for us to understand what did it take to win the championship, and that doesn't just give you the right where you're now ahead for the next weekend. And I'm not saying we feel that way, but I think teams can feel that way, and it's happened to other teams in the past where you win, you come back, you're season's over a week later. And I think the important part for us is to understand that's behind us. We got to move on and really go into it. Coach has said we're 0-0, and that's how it is.
I want to talk about the NCAAs in just a second. Before we get there, there is a lingering question out there that we talked about a little bit. Any update on Marquise and how he's doing with his rehab?
You know, Marquise is doing really well. He's progressing. You know, nothing new in terms of knowing his timetable, but he's getting better every day. And yesterday he did some things after practice, and, you know, he's getting better.
Digging with the NCAA tournament, I want to talk about the East region as a whole in just a moment, but I think you kind of touched on it just a second ago. The fan base and everyone's going to think about this as a six-game journey if Duke is fortunate to advance. I know you think of it as a two-game event, if you could explain why.
I've been in this now as a player and a coach for 10 years, which is a quarter of the time the coach has been in it. Crazy to think about, but I've been on a team where we've lost in the first round, been on a team where we've lost in the second round, been on a team we lost since Sweet 16, Elite Eight, and then two times been to Final Fours and won national championships. But I think I've seen it all in all different situations and experiences, and it doesn't matter what you've done up until this point. It does not matter. If you turn on the TV and you see what people are saying about Duke, they're saying we're going to go very far, and they don't talk about our first round game and second round game, and like we don't even know who we're playing yet. And so I think it's important just to stay in the moment. And the one thing I'll say after going through this as a player and a coach, you can't pace. You have to go into it attacking. And when you do that, I believe good things will happen. And with that said, our goal is to win a championship, and we can do that. You can't win the sixth game if you don't win the first. You can't win that sixth game if you don't win the second game. And you have to take it game by game.
And to that point, we talked about this last week. You kind of said you guys always approach this as this weekend, two games in 3 days to get to the net. You don't even talk about the next weekend. It's three kind of individual two-game tournaments.
No, and, you know, it's a really exciting time, and especially I remember when I was a freshman, you know, you're anxious to see different matchups and, you know, who's winning on your side of the bracket or the other side, and you end up becoming a fan, and you really can't do that as a player or a coach. You need to lock in on just your specific opponent and then who we're playing next if we win. That's also a key. So when you're watching TV, it's on everywhere. You can't get sidetracked by what's going on in the rest of the tournament.
Yeah, because you might stretch yourself out because there are 68 teams, and people would say, wow, that's a lot of teams, but a lot of really good teams out there. Let's look at the East region alone. Congratulations on the number one overall seed. You're rewarded with the Big Ten regular season and tournament champion, the SEC regular season champion, and the list goes on and on and on.
Right.
A lot of really good teams in this field.
No, there are. And, you know, I think people always try to dissect each bracket and say, all right, this one's the strongest, this one's the weakest, all that good stuff. You never know how it's going to shake out. Teams can get hot. So a team that hasn't done as well, South Carolina, 2 years ago we played them. They were not doing well leading up to the postseason. And they come out and beat Marquette. They beat us. And they go on to make it to a Final Four. And so it's very hard to predict.
There are a couple of teams in Duke's region that they did face earlier this year, a couple of them in conference play. Virginia Tech is the 4 seed in Duke's East region. And also you look at Louisville is the 7 seed and also the 14th seed Yale that Duke played in non-conference play earlier this year. So there are some ties, some matchups that could play out. But as everyone knows, the bracket could get turned upside down in a big time hurry and just have to see how it plays out over the course of the next couple of weeks, hopefully as Duke can advance through the bracket. But it all starts with a matchup with a 1 versus a 16 seed. And I think everyone served notice last year with UMBC. There are no gimmies in this tournament.
I think it's one of those things. All of our guys know what happened last year to Virginia. I don't think you even need to talk about it too much for them to understand it can happen. I know Coach will make it very clear. And your first time in the tournament, you have to go into it, like I said, not pacing, and that'll be a big thing.
Let's move on to the three-point shot, and I think it might take us a little time to get through this. And when the NCAA tournament gets here, I don't think those outside of the bubble of the team, because a lot of people just kind of jump in and out following the games because there are so many games going along, of everything that comes along with the NCAA tournament. The team travels a day early because of a lot of media obligations. Practice is a little different because the NCAA says that the practice, at least the first one, is going to be open to the public and open to the media. And we talked about this on the last episode. In some ways, Duke is prepared for that because they did a little bit of that on the foreign tour up in Canada. They know what the media circus looks like at this point. But even for Duke, it's a little different when you get to the NCAA tournament.
It is. It is a little different, but, you know, I think it'll be more exciting for our guys. There's a lot of, like you said, extra obligations you wouldn't normally do. Even in Canada, even in the ACC tournament, the media exposure is a lot more. But honestly, I'm not worried about it with our guys. We have been through it. They know the task at hand, and we just need to do it.
As a coaching staff, how do you guys go about, with all of that, trying to create a sense of normalcy in terms of your game prep?
Well, if they're not normal on the court, we we change that very quickly. But I think we see, here's what I'll say with that. I think it helps, it doesn't hurt. I think the more attention, the more fans, the more people that are there, the more exciting it is to play in something like that. I think the times we've worried the most about our guys is if we're practicing and no one's in the gym, or we're playing a game and might not be as talked about. And our guys, when the lights come on, they're ready to go.
And Duke has played at night so often this year, played at night a lot in the ACC tournament. We'll open, fittingly, at night in the NCAA tournament with a 7 o'clock tip on Friday evening against either, as we said earlier, NC Central or North Dakota State. Move on to our second topic, and this is kind of a fun thing for pundits to debate. I'm curious if you have a take on it. Is there a style of play or a position on the floor that becomes more important or maybe more successful during NCAA tournament play?
You know, I think you've seen it in all forms. I think, you know, your point guard play is really important in the tournament because you need to be in control of your team. And a lot of times in the second half, especially down the stretch, it becomes a half-court game. And so as much as we want to push and get out in transition, our half-court offense is going to be very important. Not just ours. This is any team. So point guard play, but I think you've seen all different ways where all of a sudden a big guy dominates the tournament. I don't think there's one necessary position, but I do think the point guard play is very, very important.
And the mentality, and you talked on this earlier about the will to win for Duke, because one of the things I think is very different than the regular season and even the conference tournaments to some extent is everyone knows you lose, this is the end of the road. So you're more likely to see teams that even don't do this during the regular season, press late in the game or foul much deeper into the game. No one's just going to say, okay, it's not our day. They're going to fight right to the very end.
Yeah, and it's amazing the different situations you've seen throughout the tournament. Teams being down by 20-plus, teams being down with 10 with a couple minutes left, and they come back and game-winning shots. And, you know, when it's your last time playing, potentially, you do some incredible things. And so you face not only the team, but you face a psychological component of it being your final time playing. And people will play us differently because there's different level of pressure playing us. That's something we have to be ready for.
And as you said, you've been around this event for a very long time, both as a fan, a player, and a coach. And I don't want to talk about Duke's matchup specifically or anything to do with Duke, but just as a third topic in general, as you watch the game casually, when you look at some of these automatic bid teams that come from maybe smaller leagues that teams don't know, what do you look at and say, that team, they've got what it takes to potentially upset someone that's a much higher seed? What sort of ingredients do you pick out?
Well, I think just the experience. When experience makes up for a lot, when you look back through lower seeds that have won, they're usually older teams who have been together for multiple years. They know each other in and out, so they can make reads off of each other. Defensively, they're very fundamentally sound. Those are the teams that have had success and you always have to look out for.
And finally, we'll go on this. Just a quick thought, your assessment of the team. We've seen them at different times this year, whether it is in Indianapolis in the State Farm Champions Classic or whether it was in Madison Square Garden against Texas Tech and now in the ACC tournament in Charlotte. It seems like, I know they're young, but they really seem to love the big stage and the bright lights, and there's nothing bigger than the NCAA tournament. Is that fair, that there's something about this team that, while other people might be like, wow, look at all this attention on all these people, these guys seem to really embrace that?
I really believe that, and it's a team. You can always go both ways. You can go, one, you're a little nervous because it's a big stage, or two, makes you attack it even more because of knowing what's at stake. I think that's where our team is at. We're confident, but also understanding anything can happen. We have to come ready. If we do that, you know, the one thing coaches talk about is defense wins championships. And that's, you look at our Florida State game, we play some incredible defense, and hopefully the bright lights brings that out of us too.
It's time to get to work. Duke opens up the NCAA tournament on Friday evening, and we will talk to you guys next week.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.